Good morning again. Good to see you this morning. You know, the sheep and the goats, left and right. I'm not sure where to stand this morning, if I'm in the back of the building or the front of the building, but we have a lot of one of them on this side. I'm not sure which that is, stage left or stage right. But it is good to see you all this morning. I also thought I had looked at the schedule wrong. I could have swore Joel was preaching this morning from his wonderful appearance this morning. He was at the barber. He was at I want to say seamstress, but I know that's not. What's that? The tailor. Thank you. You can tell I haven't been there ever. But it's good to see Joel this morning. He looks good. He said he had to keep up with Elizabeth, and I said, well, you're way behind, and you're never going to get there. But it is a nice try. It is good to see you this morning. I appreciate your efforts in being here. And I invite you, as always, to open your Bibles and take some notes on the sheet that I gave you. And hopefully, as was prayed this morning, we will find our time here useful as we study together. We're going to ask ourselves a question this morning. And I'm not necessarily looking for a hand-up answer like I do every other day of my life. But I'm going to ask you to ask yourself the question, would you consider this to be a strong congregation? Would you consider this to be a strong congregation? And the key word there being strong. Even if it were true, would we admit if we weren't? If you'd go, well, we're pretty strong, you know what that means, right? Kara says, is the spaghetti good? It's pretty good. I know what kind of a look I would get. Although she would really ask, and you know her, she would say, okay, what do I need to do to it? She would be very, very open to that. But if we decided and we found something that could make us stronger, what would our attitude be toward it? What should our attitude be toward it? And I think we would all have a pretty good attitude that we want to be as strong as possible, right? That's the goal. And there are going to be times when we don't find ourselves maybe as strong as we could be, ought to be, should be, for some reason. So we're going to look, Lord willing, this morning, and if I do a lesson next month, a second part of this, about maybe making ourselves stronger. Okay? Ger. Because I think we do have some strength. But we could always be better, stronger, and be more effective. Now, one thing I want to be sure that we completely understand this morning is that there is a difference between a congregation and and the church. And I'm going to borrow some of Jared's board. He asked me if I had plenty of room or if I needed the board. If we think of this window as the church, okay? You've got one large pane of glass. It's either sound or it's not sound. It's either solid or it's broken, right? And this analogy was made many, many years ago to me, and I've never, ever forgot it. And I also like old architecture, old houses, log cabins, things of that nature. And if you think about the way windows were created in the past, they were made sort of like this. And the reason that that was done, well, number one, because a big piece of glass would have been super expensive, is that if something happened to one of the panes of the glass in that window, it was pretty easy to replace. And you didn't have to replace at all, right? Didn't have to replace at all. You know, these windows, we've had accidents with them before, and I'm going to tell a Joe story if I can, Mary. Joe was mowing years ago, and he was mowing this ditch out here. And this ditch out here used to be full of gravel until it filled in with silt. And as he was mowing, he had the mower pointed toward the building, which I have before, and I know Kent has before, and a couple other of us, if we would admit to it, and he hit some rocks. And that window right behind Jared ended up all over the floor back there. Now, when we replaced that window, it wasn't just removing a little piece of glass and reglazing a little piece of glass. We had to take the frame out and replace that window with a brand new window, the whole thing, right? We see God's wisdom in designing his church like this, right? The whole frame is the church, and the small panes represent congregations of the church. There are congregations maybe that aren't as strong as others, And there are some that are thriving, right? But we all make up panes of glass in the church. So when you look at the New Testament, for instance, Matthew 16, "Blessed are you, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I say to you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church." Did he have Marietta Reno specifically in mind when he said that? I don't believe it. We didn't exist yet, right? When he talked about his church, he talked about the church. Universal, right? And if we look in the book of Revelation, we can see at least seven, he said, churches of Asia, right? So were there seven different churches? Or there were seven congregations of the church, right? So I think we get that, don't we? And you know, there's a lot of wisdom in that. Because if you have all your eggs in one basket, and you drop that basket, all your eggs are broken, right? If you drop one egg on your way from the coop to the house, okay, the dogs can have that one, right? But all the eggs aren't destroyed. All the operation is not broken. And this is God's wisdom. Jesus said, "I will build my church," and he said, "the gates of hell shall not prevail against it." So the Lord's church is never weak. It's always strong. But what about congregations of it? And you know, this morning, let's not worry about any of these other congregations, just ours, okay? Because you know what? We got no business in anyone else's congregations. No business whatsoever. That's one of the problems in the religious world today, right? Many of their congregations are all involved in activities, and it's not the way God designed the church. He said, "You mind your business in your place." What did he tell the elders in 1 Peter 5? He said, "Take care of the congregation where you're at," right? You worry about it. And that's God's plan. So let's talk a little bit about strength then. Is strength measurable? Yeah, absolutely. It is measurable. I know that there are some young folks in here, and there's even some older folks pretending to be young who still lift weights. And you know, when that happens, we measure things, right? What was your bench press? What was your squat? How far did you run today? How high did you jump? We keep records for things like that, right? World records and state records and school records and things of that nature. All kind of records. We are all about measurement. How many of you have a watch on or a clock on your phone today? Yep. Anybody measuring their steps? How about their calories? We measure everything that can be measured. We do. Endurance and distance. We even have measurements for flavor. I know some of you like chicken wings and smoked ribs and sauces and Soville units. I knew Dale would know that. I've had lots of conversations with him about Soville units, right? The heat that's in peppers that are flavoring for food. So we measure everything. And generally, sadly, I find that I like to measure everything that I can control and that doesn't really affect me. But when it comes to measuring stuff for myself, like, you know, healthy things, and that's not so important. That doesn't really matter. It's just a number. Age is just a number. Weight's just a number. Blood pressure is just a number. No, they're not. Well, they are, but they mean more than that, don't they? So you see how measurement works in our lives? We like to measure things that we find benefit in measuring, right? Sometimes for bragging rights or sometimes for identification. We measure miles, don't we, on our car? Time for an oil change, time for a tire rotation. Well, some of us do. Time for a car wash. It's going to rain. So we are good at doing that. And you know, we're measured as a congregation too. In Revelation 3, do you remember what Jesus was doing among the candlesticks in Revelation 3 and a little bit in 2, a little bit in 4? He was walking among the candlesticks and he was evaluating congregations. Now, you know, Jesus being Jesus and God having his record keeping as he does, I have pictures of, he had a book, and the book had each congregation. There's no physical book there, right? But God has a book, God keeps record, and God knows our strength. But he was evaluating these congregations, and in particular, I want to look at one in verses 16 and 17, Revelation 3. Start in verse 14. And to the angel of the church of the Laodiceans write, these sayings says the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of God. I know your works, that you are neither cold nor hot. I could wish you were cold or hot. Is that a measurement? We measure cold and hot, right? If Thelma were here this morning, I'd sure ask her a question. Thelma, you enjoying the weather? And she'd say, no, Steve, I'm not. She likes it warm. She'd say, I know you like it when it's 40. We measure, right? Numbers. And Jesus uses a comparison of a congregation to temperature. He said, cold and hot. So then, because you are lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will vomit you out of my mouth. Is that not a nasty picture? I'll vomit you out of my mouth. I don't have that problem with food. If it's cold, hot, warm, okay, I'll eat it. I like it better one way or the other, but it's not really ever kept me from eating it. But Jesus said, with a congregation, nope. And you know, I think we could discuss this for days. Why would he say cold or hot? You know, he would rather have us as a congregation on fire, right? He would rather have us hot. But he also said, I just don't want you in the middle. I don't want you, I want you cold or I want you hot. Because lukewarm, and there's a reason for that, lukewarm's deceptive. Lukewarm is a name that you're alive, but you're not really. And sometimes we call those people hypocrites, don't we? They're not pretending to be cold or pretending to be, well, they're pretending to be hot, but they don't reach the goal. So strength is measurable. Jesus did it right here in these verses. And he identifies it. You know, when folks measure strength, and I know everyone under 30 right now in this building probably knows exactly where the battery meter is on their phone. I've got one that I don't really care about. I plug it in, it works for 2 days, and that's good. But isn't it nice to have that little battery meter? And I got a picture of one on there. What if you had one of those on your forehead that people could look at that gauged your spiritual strength? Would you like that? Would you like for people to be able to look directly at you and say, oh, he's strong, she's strong, no, she's weak, she needs recharged? What if our building had a above the door, a big, large neon strength meter, and people could pull up in the driveway and look at it and say, ah, strong congregation, 4 bars out of 5. Wouldn't that be nice? Well, you know what, honestly, truly, when people look at us, they can tell. When anybody spends much time in a congregation, I know some of us preach other places and we visit, and we could probably gauge pretty accurately the strength of those congregations, not judging them, observing their fruit. We can pretty much tell, right, by what's happening. So, and ideally, if you think about it, God can look right at our spiritual level. He knows where we're at, right? He knows if we're 1 out of 5 or 4 out of 5 or wherever we're at. And it's completely under our control. That's what we forget sometimes. You know, there are times, now I want you to change this up a little bit. I want this to be the congregation. I want this to be each of us. Isn't that also a good application? We're all little windows of our congregation. If I had the time, I'd draw a chain on there. That's a better analogy. How strong is a chain? Somebody can tell me. How strong is a chain? Weakest link. I've tested some chains before, and I found out where the weakest link was. It's not fun. And a congregation, same thing. You know, in Matthew 7 is the verse I was referring to, verses 16 through 20. All we are fruit inspectors. We're fruit inspectors. People say, don't judge me. You can't judge me. No, we're not. We're judging your fruit. We're judging what you produce, each other. We can look at each other, can't we? Matthew 7, 16 through 20. Jesus surely does it. And you know, our job is this. Our job is to help each other be the best fruit producers possible. Sometimes we've got to prune each other, right? And I know that's a weird analogy. But sometimes that's what we got to do. If you see a branch growing where it shouldn't be, we got to help each other prune that, get rid of it, right? To make our plant as strong as it can be. So are there measurable indicators? Yes, I believe that there are. And I was looking, not always finding what I'm looking for, but I was looking for some ideas on the internet, and I found a field guide to U.S. congregations. Survey of what makes a congregation strong. And I thought, oh boy, this is going to be an enjoyable read. And you know what I found? I found eight things on there that I am completely blown away by. These eight things, we're going to look at four of them briefly this morning, and Lord willing, four of them maybe next month. These are things that people were surveyed as to what makes a congregation strong, what they look for in a congregation. And boy, I thought, oh boy, here it goes. We're going to find a bunch of far-out things that, no. I agree that these eight ought to match our own evaluation. First one, spiritual growth. And I was really blown away that this was number one on the list. Because I think so many folks, spiritually, kind of that's the last thing. They want all the physical. They want all, but according to this survey, which, take it for what it's worth, is a survey, many worshipers are growing in their faith and feel that the congregation meets their spiritual needs. Amen. Isn't that what we look for in a congregation? I look at this as a charging station. And we come in and we sit down in our charger, cordless charger, and we get recharged. We're supposed to. What's the purpose of the church? Why did Jesus come? He said he came to blank and blank the blank. Seek and save the lost. That was his purpose, his main purpose. The focus must be there first, right? A serving purpose. Back to Revelation 3 for a second. Here was a congregation that if you would have asked them, they would have said, oh, that's what we're about. But look what Jesus went on to say. Because you say, I am rich and become wealthy and have need of nothing, and know that you are wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked. So here's a congregation that said, yep, we're strong. Jesus said, no. They thought wealth and not needing anything physically was the issue. Well, the building's warm. The lot is comfortable. It doesn't rain in here. That's not what he was talking about, right? I don't know what their building looked like. Wouldn't you like to know? I have a feeling it was pretty fancy. Because look at the description of themselves. I'm rich and I'm wealthy and I have need of nothing. But he said, no, that's not the case. Spiritual growth was important in that. Not that we can neglect the others. You know, we don't want a haunted house sitting here that people are afraid to pull in the parking lot. But we ought to be more concerned with what's happening spiritually. You know, Jesus' focus on feeding the Spirit with truth is important. And you know, his messages weren't always taken real well. Many times when Jesus would give a lesson, the hearers sometimes went away challenged and angry and upset and confused. What's he mean? Because he challenged them spiritually, right? The Jews were looking for physical. That's what they had known for centuries. The temple, which we just are studying with Kent in our Bible class, it was amazing. But you know what? Jesus said, that's not what's important, right? So we've got to be careful there. And, you know, I agree completely with this first point. Many worshipers are growing in their faith. And you know what? That'll show. That'll show in attendance. That'll show in compassion for each other. That'll show in what we do outside the building, right? Because if we're not growing spiritually, everything else is going to suffer too. Everything else, including the looks of the building, the care for each other, the love we have for each other. That's all important, isn't it? So how do we measure that? Well, is it observable? Yes. Folks change, right? Folks change. Observe Christ in us. We sing a hymn sometimes. Let the beauty of Jesus be seen in me. That's growing, isn't it? Will we ever reach his level of righteousness and goodness and compassion and love? No, but we ought to be getting closer all the time, right? In care and concern. Better today than yesterday. That's the goal, right? Progress. A congregation is for edifying, strengthening its members. And I was glad that that was the first thing that at least this group of people were looking for. Number two, meaningful worship. Many worshipers experience God's presence and joy, inspiration and joy in the services, and feel that worship helps them with life. Anybody disagree with that? Isn't that what it's about? Isn't that why we came together this morning? We sing another hymn, true worship. Oft we come together, oft we sing and pray. Here we give, we study, we partake of the Lord's Supper, we edify. So that's what worship is about. That's what it's about, meaningful worship. Now, if there's meaningful worship, then what is there also? Vain worship, right? Empty worship. Filling a pew for an hour and leaving feeling the same or worse than we did when we got here. And that happens sometimes. That happens. You know, Jesus in Mark 7, he talked about vain worship. He talked about vain worship because of what was being taught. In Mark chapter 7, verse 7, starting verse 6, and he answered and said to them, well did Isaiah the prophet say of you hypocrites, as it is written, this people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. In vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. If we don't teach the message of the cross and the message of Jesus, if we're teaching our own agenda, something that humans have come up with as important, it's vain, right? It's empty. Teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. Worship is to be seen of men, yes, but not for its own value, not for its pomp and circumstance. It's for the scriptural authority that comes with it, that comes from it. You know, in John chapter 4, Jesus explained this too, and I know that you know this account very well. Jesus was teaching a woman who was wanting some water, right? She needed water at the well, and I know you know this account. And he is explaining to her that there are people who worship at a specific location, and they do it vainly. And he's told her there in this chapter, he said that the worshipers, the true worshipers of God, must worship two ways, right? Truth is important, but he said in spirit also. And sometimes we can have truth and not spirit. And sometimes we can have spirit and not truth. You know, there's two extremes. The happy medium is where we need to be. We can be at the correct place, the correct action, the correct day, and have the correct emblems and still do it wrong. And we can have the correct heart, the correct focus, the correct purpose, the correct love, and still do it wrong. So what we've got to do, our challenge is to worship meaningfully in spirit and in truth, right? That's a great responsibility. And you know, we can't just show up at 2 minutes after and throw together something and make it meaningful in spirit and in truth, can we? It takes planning. It takes something that we put effort into, not just any old thing, any old way. You know, I thought about Cain and Abel in this way. You know, when you talk about the worship that those two offered, and I know we're boiling it down and we don't know much about it, really, but one of those young men was accepted, and one of them wasn't accepted. But they both gave something, right? the firstling of the flocks, the firstling of the fruit. And I think there's a good lesson in there for us. So vain worship is worship that's for self. It's worship that is not authorized, right? You didn't follow the instructions. You didn't play fairly. You didn't follow the rules. And because of that, it wasn't accepted. And we just pointed out pretty plainly there in Matthew that can happen. A lack of zeal, a lack of effort, a lack of interest, a lack of passion, that's not accepted either. Boy, God's picky, isn't he? Yes. But he can be, right? He created us and he gave us the directions to do this. And just like we tried to point out here this morning, it takes all of us to make the congregation strong, right? One bad apple, we know how that works. And, you know, one bad pawpaw, or whatever that is that we're talking about, soon affects the other. So we've got to be careful. Number three, participation in the congregation. Many worshipers attending services weekly and are involved with congregational activities along with worship. That one really shocked me. Is that what people are really looking for? Many worshipers attend services weekly and are involved with congregational activities. Is worship and service a spectator sport? Can you just go and watch people worship? Well, you can. But is it effective? No, it's not effective. Not effective at all. You know, just like Spencer mentioned Wednesday night, I enjoy athletics. And you know, I watched a couple college football games yesterday. And there were 100,000 people that bought tickets and they were involved. I'm telling you right now. They were screaming. I'll bet there are people today that can't talk. They stood and screamed the whole time. And they affected the game, let me tell you. I saw 100,000 of them tear a goalpost out of the ground and carry it around the stadium and carry it out of the facility and up the street. Tell me that it's not a spectator-involved sport. And you know, I don't expect you guys to tear this podium apart this morning because of my lesson and carry it around in here and take it out the door and carry it down the street. I don't want you to do that. Okay? This took a lot of time. Randy Reeder and I built this thing. And I just don't think a couple of you could tear it apart, to be honest with you. But you know, if we leave looking like we were just at a funeral, that's worse than false joy and false hope, right? That's not why we're here this morning. When we sing with the spirit and the understanding, pray with the spirit and the understanding, and be involved in your classes. Don't drool all over your lap because you're sad or unhappy. You might be. But hopefully we can leave here. And that's what participation in a congregation means, right? You know, this whole two-year COVID thing and tuning in to watch worship on the computer, it may have served its purpose for a little while, but it did a lot of harm to the church. Because there are people today that feel like, and I'm glad you're here, if you're here. Thanks for watching. But I sure wish you were in a congregation experiencing the togetherness of a congregation. I think that's what God wanted. That's what he designed. You know, you can put a person in a room their whole lives and let them watch people in a family, and it's not going to be the same thing as being part of that family, is it? No. We need the touch and the communication and the being together. And if we separate ourselves away from it, it ain't good. You know the analogy of the hot coal, right? You pull it away from the fire, and what happens to it? It turns dark and cold, and if you push it back to the rest, it warms up again. That's what happens. Singing, praying, giving, growing. This is not a spectator sport. And even spectator sports have an audience involvement. The 12th man, some of you know what that means. Texas A&M, their crowd wears t-shirts. There's only 11 men on the field. That's where it comes from. And the 12th man is that one in the stands. So that's why we do that. That's why we're together. Involvement. Now, I didn't realize this, but here's some information. I feel like Jared this morning. Active worship, that's when more than 50% of the people are active in it. That's what religious world says. More than 50%. Now, come on. Have you ever been in a Church of Christ worship where less than 50% participated? I hope you haven't. Less than 50% sang, less than 50% prayed with the man or that's leading the praying, less than 50% of the people. If that's the case, it's called passive worship. Almost as if that's acceptable. Traditional, contemporary, blended, liturgical, I think I said that right. These are different styles that are in the religious world today. And I have a friend, we have three different worships. We have contemporary, and we have traditional, and we have liturgical, public. And our plan is to get 30% involvement. Woohoo. 30% is their goal. If we can get 30% involved, we've done something. How sad. New styles adopted due to a lack of active participation, amplifiers, performers with music and instruments. We got to get people excited. We got to play some music, get their heart pumping and get them up. And folks, that's only emotions. Yeah. That's not what God designed. Commands, examples, inferences do not authorize this, the performers and the great attempt that people have today. It's because of a failure to participate is what it is. Folks just want to come in and plop down and be entertained. That's not what worship is. That's not what worship is. That worship, according to 1 Corinthians 11:27-30, when we don't actively participate in the Lord's Supper, it leads to weakness and death. He said, for this cause, many among you are weak, and some have fallen asleep because of the not partaking of the Lord's Supper actively. Is it okay this morning if I just partake the Lord's Supper for you? It'd be cleaner, wouldn't it, if I just took the bread and drank the juice? And I'm not being, I'm being facetious, but I'm not being a smart aleck there. You would say, no, that's not right. You can't partake the Lord's Supper for me. I need to do it. Well, you know what? Singing, praying, being actively involved, we got to do all of that. Faith without works is dead. James 1:19-27. Participation takes many levels and faces. I get that. Not all of us are song leaders. Not all of us are prayer leaders. Not all of us are take a class by yourself teachers. But boy, we can all do something. We can all support it, be part of it, right? 1 Corinthians 12, we do not all have the same function. You know, not all of us have the pretty face. Not all of us have the beautiful feet or the hand model hands. But we all have a purpose, right? According to 1 Corinthians 12, because we're all part of the living body, right? And lastly, a sense of belonging, number 4. Many worshipers have a strong sense of belonging and say that most of their closest friends attend the same congregation. Many worshipers have a strong sense of belonging and say that most of their closest friends attend the same congregation. One of the basic necessities of the human is the need for connection, right? Belonging and safety. Now, I know if I mention psychology, there's going to be some young people in here that are like, oh no, that are taking Psych 101 in school. It was kind of interesting, but boy, there were some strange things in there. But you know, one of the things that I really liked was Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Before you can ever teach someone, a young person, they have to have certain things met in their life, right? And one of those things was connection, safety, feeling of belonging. And the same thing goes in a congregation. If you don't feel part of a congregation, actively engaged with other folks who are here, the teaching part falls aside, right? Are you going to listen to somebody that you don't love, respect, trust? Probably not. Someone who you don't feel has your best interest in mind? Nope. It's not going to work. You know, man has always worshipped. Even if it was ignorantly, they've always worshipped, right? You know, we always talk about the Native Americans and their love for the land and the gods, the sun and the moon and things that they knew. They knew something was supernatural about that, right? And many civilizations have things that they've worshipped, some ignorantly and some incorrectly, according to what God wanted, but they've always worshiped. They shared beliefs and goals and actions with others. They participated in worship and rituals. Well, God has narrowed that down for us. And he certainly wants us to have a sense of belonging, right? We're told to what? One another. Prefer one another, right? Do you have any friends in congregations? I hope you do. I hope you have some of your closest friends. If most of our friends or all of our friends are worldly people, we better evaluate maybe a little bit about that. It's okay to have friends. And maybe we're working on those friends and we're being a good example to those friends, but we need friends here, associates. Maybe it's physical family, but spiritual family is so important too, right? Sometimes we get to the point where that's all we have left is a spiritual family, right? And sometimes that's the closest for us. That's the way it should be. People join various groups, right? Work-related unions, gangs. Why do people join gangs? Why are people mafia members? Well, you'd be surprised sometimes. Sometimes that's all people have. And they join something to be part of a group. Maybe it has bad reputation and maybe it does evil things, but that connection to that group is important for people. You'll learn that in psychology too. Clubs, organizations. Dale, why'd you join the fire department? Help others. That was a common goal, right? Yeah. It wasn't just for the cool shirts, right? And the cool lights in the truck. That wasn't why. We have goals for things that we do, right? I knew he'd say that. That's why I put him on the spot like that. Why do we join this group, this club, this organization? Why'd you join the Lord's church? Why were you added to his church? I hope there's a big goal. And I know Jared's two songs this morning about heaven. That's a big part of it, right? But it's more than that. We should get something from this, a sense of belonging. And if we don't feel a sense of belonging, maybe we aren't putting anything into it, right? Maybe we aren't attending things and doing things and being an active part of things like we need to. Don't be that coal that gets pushed aside because you know what's going to happen. It's going to turn cold and grow dark and eventually get swept aside, right? We need to stay close to a sense of belonging and get involved with something. Get involved with something. Last passage this morning, Romans 12. I think this is a powerful verse that illustrates this point very well. Romans 12, 10 through 21. Be kindly affectionate one to another with brotherly love in honor, giving preference to one another. Not lagging in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing steadfastly in prayer, distributing to the needs of the saints, given to hospitality. Bless those who persecute you, bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. Be of the same mind toward one another. Do not set your mind on high things, but associate with the humble. Do not be wise in your own opinion. Repay no one evil for evil. Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. If it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Therefore, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him drink. For in so doing, you will heap coals of fire on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. When you read those verses, Romans 12, 10 through 21, and you think about the sense of belonging, I think that should boost us a little. Knowing that when you're here today, you're here for yourself, but you're also here for everyone else, right? What if you see that coal roll away from the fire? Reach out and pull it closer, right? Don't say, stay out there. Because of this verse that we just read, be kindly affectionate one to another with brotherly love and honor, giving preference to one another. So I think these four points very well establish and help us identify the strength of the church. So if we were to score ourselves this morning, spiritual growth, we have people growing spiritually. Meaningful worship, is our worship meaningful in spirit and in truth? Do people participate in the congregation, in the worship, as well as activities and things that we do together? And how about a sense of belonging? So I think that we can use these things to help make ourselves stronger and thus make our group stronger. If you're here today and you're not a Christian, look at all you're missing. The things that we talked about this morning are designed for all of us. But we must be part of the group. We must be added to the church to reap the benefits of it. And you know, the method to do that is really quite simple. Hearing the word and believing it. Being willing to repent of the actions that we're engaged in that are wrong. Confess with our mouth that we believe Jesus is the Son of God, and confess with our lives that we put that into practice. And then be immersed in water. I think many people here are through four steps of that. They just need the baptism part. That's the thing that's the most immediate, right? You can do that in 5 minutes. Now, the rest of it is tricky. And once you are baptized, we're told to remain faithful, right? Be thou faithful unto death, or until death, both, is important. And you receive the crown of life. If we can help you today, that was our goal. That's the goal of our study and the goal of us being here. We would love to assist you. If you would like to render obedience, if you'd like to be immersed in water, water's ready, and we'll help you do that. If you are a member and you've kind of got aside and you're cooling off as that ember, we need to get ourselves closer again so that we might be strong. If we can help you, take a seat in the front as we stand and sing.